Good evening, folks. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports, part of Blog Talk Radio's Global Patriot Radio Network, here at 6 p.m. Eastern every Wednesday. Today is Wednesday, November the 18th, 2020. I'm not sure why I was about to say July. No idea. Hey, if you want to call into the show, 319-527-6706. You can always email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook. Look up Hank Jones Polysports. I'm on Twitter, at hpolysports. But the best, the brightest, the funnest, the coolest way to listen and interact is by calling 319-527-6706. Very coolest way. Other shows on GPR, every Monday, Vito and Al, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Big Al, Mamma Mia No Sharia. Tuesdays at 6 as well, Eric from Kafir with Radio Free Kafiristan. Every Thursday, Paul Sutliff is in with the Sutliffian Report at 7 o'clock. Great stuff. Finally had a chance to hear Paul live. I'd always listened on Memorex, as they say, but I listened to him live the other day. Unfortunately, I had a thing going on, a virtual deal going on at the same time, so I was half listening for part of it. Fridays, Conservative Casual Friday, Islam in Focus with Andrew Herod. That's a noon or 1 o'clock show, so you have to be aware of that one. And the best way, always come to blogtalkradio.com/global-patriot-radio, and it'll bring you right up to the site, right up to our page. You can look at each day what's going to happen. Saturday nights, 10 to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. Sundays, Eric is back with Real Interfaith Dialogue. For that one, I must remind you, you need to download or put on your computer the app for it. It's not a free-for-all like the rest of the shows. You can always come in here, like I said before, come into the show and get in the chat room. Usually have some witty banter, as they say. Let's get right to late and breaking and or latest news on various things. Latest on the presidential election. I would guess we are looking at President-elect Biden, but recounts are still being done at least in Michigan, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Arizona, I believe Nevada as well, Wisconsin possibly. Allegations continue to come up regarding fraudulent votes, ballots, registrations, faulty software, etc. Lawsuits are still being filed and still being advanced and still being tossed. Some have been tossed. Like I said before, this will probably end up in the Supreme Court. If they refuse it, you can pretty much say the fix was in, or they just don't care, or the DNC truly covered all their bases in advance, including the Supreme Court, which would be truly remarkable. They usually let the media complete the cover-up after the fact. So that's what's happening in the election latest. Some recent passings. This past Sunday, former Minnesota Vikings defensive back Kyle Morrell, passed away at the age of 57. The cause was ALS, otherwise known as Lou Gehrig's disease. That's a terrible disease. I mean, it makes COVID look just like a cold. I've known a couple people that had it that passed from it. Just awful what it does. University of Tennessee Martin basketball coach Anthony Stewart passed away very suddenly this past Sunday. He was age 50. No known cause as yet, but that's kind of a shock. I mean, they say suddenly and they say shocking. So former NBAer Terry Durod passed away last Friday of leukemia. He was 64. He earned a ring with the Celtics in 1981, but more interesting, at least to me, played his college ball at Detroit Mercy, which was then known as University of Detroit, under the quasi-legendary Dick Vitale. I know, it's Dickie V. No, actually, it's not. For anyone who has listened to him for more than 30 seconds during the past 20 years, it's Dookie V. Never has one unbiased color commentator been more in the tank for any team than Dookie V has been for Coach K and the Duke Blue Devils. More recently, Terry Durod retired from the Detroit Fire Department after serving for 27 years. Okay, it's not Chicago Fire, for those of you that know that show. No, he's not Herman or Mouch. But still, a firefighter is no doubt his heroic and his admirable career. Let's see, last Friday also, legendary Paul Hornung passed away at age 84 from complications of dementia. He was and still is the only winner of the Heisman Trophy who played on a losing team, that being Notre Dame's Fighting Irish in 1956. The Golden Boy, as he was called, he went on to a pretty successful career with the Packers. He was the very first player drafted in 1957. He won four championships with the Pack. He was the 1961 NFL MVP, and on December 12th of 1965, he scored five touchdowns in a game against the Colts. Only thing is, that same day, a Chicago Bear rookie named Gale Sayers, also regrettably recently passed away, he scored six touchdowns in a game against the San Francisco 49ers. Personally, I'll always remember Paul Hornung for the Notre Dame football highlights. They'd show him on Sunday mornings on various Chicago TV stations, whether it would be Channel 26 for a while, Channel 44, Channel 32. He and Lindsey Nelson, they would recap the previous day's Fighting Irish game. And trust me, I was no fan of Notre Dame, and I'm still not. But in a way, that almost made watching Notre Dame palatable. I would have to guess Hornung and Nelson helped immortalize the phrase, "And moving to another series of downs later in the quarter," no matter what quarter it was, first through fourth, they managed to cram a 2 or 3 hour game into 30 minutes. Let that be a note to some of you folks out there. Jerry DiNardo or Glenn Mason or even Jay Layman, they can't cram one scoring play into 30 minutes. Ever. I mean, Hornung almost made you wish it was a 60-minute show. I mean, they were that good. And like I said, I was not a Notre Dame fan. I was not really a Packer fan, but no doubting the greatness of Paul Hornung. For my Hawkeye brethren, former state resident, served as a state senator, served as lieutenant governor, and then in the U.S. Senate from 1975, Roger Jepson passed away last Friday at age 91 at a hospice center in Bettendorf. And talk about a guy that's not only able to leave politics behind, but a man who served his country in multiple ways. He was a paratrooper in the U.S. Army and the Army Reserves. He was twice named a special representative of the president by President Reagan. First, he went to Madagascar in 1985.
been there, beautiful country, beautiful people. And then later he was dispatched to Israel for the funeral of General Moshe Dayan. Finally, last Friday, the death of Peter William Sutcliffe at the age of 74 of COVID. One would normally see age 74 and COVID and give a sympathetic moan. In this case, hold off, Peter William Sutcliffe, a.k.a. Peter William Coonan, is best known as the Yorkshire Ripper. Yes, he was a convicted serial killer who said the voice of God sent him to kill prostitutes. What's not clear, and probably never will be, is whether that voice also told him to use the services of many of those prostitutes he killed. Yes, indeed, he used their services and then killed them. You know, this was sort of best stated in Spinal Tap. This is Spinal Tap, but I'll say it again here. Such a fine line between stupid and clever. Well, let's get to politics news. Why not? In what may be considered the first sign of proof that there are still sane, rational, normal, freedom-loving people in the state of New York, several sheriffs in the state have openly stated they will neither honor nor enforce Governor Andrew Cuomo's Thanksgiving mandates limiting gatherings to 10 people. One sheriff, Richard Giardino of Fulton County, posted this on Facebook. And I quote, "Who and how many people you invite into your home is your business," end quote. Giardino added that he will leave it up to the people of the county to make the right decisions on their own, and that entering homes to, quote, "see how many turkey or tofu eaters are present," unquote, isn't a priority for the office, for his office. He also wrote that Governor Cuomo's order may even be unconstitutional, writing, "Frankly, I am not sure it could sustain a constitutional challenge in court for several reasons, including the idea that your house is your castle. And as a sheriff with a law degree, I couldn't, in good faith, attempt to defend it in court. So I won't." In Erie County, Sheriff Timothy B. Howard said, "I have no plans to utilize my office's resource or deputies to break up the great tradition of Thanksgiving dinner. This national holiday has created longstanding family traditions that are at the heart of America, and these traditions should not be stopped or interrupted by Governor Cuomo's mandates. My office will respect the sanctity of your home and traditions, and I encourage you to follow your home and your heart and act responsibly, as well as do what's best for your family." Saratoga County Sheriff Michael Zurlo says his office will prioritize other 911 calls, noting that there are far more emergent 911 calls to respond to than those reporting numbers of cars in driveways or investigating how much turkey and dressing people have purchased. Says that's not exactly a good use of department resources. Zurlo says the sheriff's office considers the homes of county residents as sacrosanct for the citizens, and as such, will not respond to calls regarding possible violation of Governor Cuomo's order. For his part, Governor Cuomo noted, Governor Cuomo noted, quote, "The rules are only as good as the enforcement. Local governments are in charge of enforcement. There are only two fundamental truths in this situation. It's individual discipline and it's government enforcement. Period. End of sentence. I need the local governments to enforce this." Kind of goes on from there, blah, blah, blah. 3 minutes of basically that over and over. Governor Cuomo in a landslide, this week's comrade of the week. In the is it too late to get an additional 15 minutes department, has-been actress Holly Robinson Peete is alleging that Donald Trump, during Celebrity Apprentice, a mere 10 years ago, may have used the N-word in discussing whether she should be chosen during the show's finale. She said this during an interview on Sirius XM Radio's The Karen Hunter Show. She said Trump hadn't started the whole birther thing yet, or she would not have appeared on the show. She said she found Trump, quote, kind of piggish and bullish and stuff, but she didn't see the person he has become now, saying, I think the combination of power and corruption and all that stuff just made him go to that next level. She said he was kind of lovely face to face. Bear in mind, she wasn't in earshot and never actually heard him say it. She says other people told her. No tapes allegedly exist of Trump using that word during the Celebrity Apprentice. None have ever been found. There is no proof they actually exist. As an aside, if it didn't happen, or if it did happen, or there are tapes, chances are we'd have heard this back in, say, the day after he secured the GOP nomination. Don't you think? Knowing our media. Peete went on to say, I firmly believe he probably uses that language all the time. Of particular interest here, she lost out on being Celebrity Apprentice to Bret Michaels. No, not Lorne Michaels, Bret Michaels. Tell you what, say what you will about Donald Trump, but Celebrity Apprentice kind of proves one thing. Fame whores. Now, come to think of it, since she is married to Rodney Peete, should I have even done this under politics? Shouldn't it have just been poly sports? Or maybe even sports? I don't know. Sports are probably going to all be canceled anyway. Now that the Ivy League has opened the floodgates, canceling all of its winter sports seasons. Victor Davis Hanson, he's a genius political columnist, commentator, analyst. So last Saturday, the Epoch Times, which is a news source consisting of several different investors and editors and such, they published an interview with him conducted by their senior editor, Jan Jakeliak. It might be just Jan Jakeliak. Among other things, Victor Davis Hanson pointed out why some of these polls are done well beyond mere suppression and potential influencing. He noted that stories put out falsely, for instance, that Trump's campaign had literally shut down in Florida and had pulled all advertising given the 4-point-plus loss he was experiencing in the state. Right? So, yeah, he won by almost 4 points. Hanson also noted that Fox and CNN and others not calling Florida or Texas for Trump, but calling Arizona, which, by the way, is still not resolved or certified, and saying Republicans had lost the Senate plus as many as 10 additional House seats. Yeah, he says this polls, the media, and Silicon Valley money has shown their hand in their desire to not only control the narrative, but control the people and the country. Good evening, Vito, in the chat room. Mamma mia. He gave an idea of what we're going to see in Georgia between now and January 5th of 2021. He says, essentially, it's going to be Sherman's March, but conducted by Silicon Valley, Bloomberg, Apple, Google, Facebook, and Twitter. Those will be the ones marching. We have literally, he put it in time, we have literally gone from voters informing and educating themselves about candidates and issues to voters who don't care, whose answer now is, just tell me where to put the X. It's past being about getting out the vote. It's now all about getting out the vote harvesters. But worse than that, if it can be worse, we now have the pollsters, media, and progressive left all working in concert. It isn't about voting rights or even about voting legal. It's not even about legal or illegal campaign money. It's about control and manipulation. They, as he said, they no longer seek to influence public opinion, they seek to direct and manipulate it and predetermine it. They aren't conducting polls for information. They're using them to manipulate and predetermine public sentiment. But he brought up something even more frightening. The idea of big tech and big media, be it Silicon Valley, Seattle, LA, New York, DC, controlling what can be advertised, what stories can be seen. It doesn't matter whether or not a story is reported. As long as they can hide it, censor it, or bury it, they literally can control the media. And when they use an excuse like a pandemic to change the voting structure and control the information, we have a perfect storm. I'll tell you, reading this, it raises three questions for me. First of all, at what point is censorship illegal? And at what point is it punished? You think of Jack Dorsey appearing before Congress, Mark Zuckerberg, Google, Amazon. There's an antitrust now movement against Google. You know, at what point is censorship illegal and or punishable? Some would say, well, the First Amendment. Well, the First Amendment doesn't specifically rule against, but it does not protect lying. It doesn't protect censorship. It protects freedom to say what you will. My next question, when polling has become manipulation, it becomes weaponized, what's the solution? And at what point is it criminal? I mean, presumably polls and the information are given to all the candidates. All the candidates see that, theoretically. But now they're not that. They're little more than war tactics and strategies. And when it becomes used this way, it becomes voter infringement. And lastly, the last question I have, if they're going to politicize and weaponize a pandemic this time, when, if ever, are we, the American people, safe? As an example, if Red China was or is all in for Biden, what's the next pandemic catastrophe or, God forbid, terror attack on our soil, complete with engraved invitation from a Joe Biden? When does that happen next? So food for thought, a very insightful interview from the always brilliant, always on Victor Davis Hanson over on Epic Times conducting that. Oh, let's see, move on. A memory card has been found in a Georgia precinct that had uncounted votes, majority of them for President Trump. This is now the third county with this issue. That makes Stayette, Floyd, and Walton counties holders, or should I say withholders, of a net gain of over 1,100 votes for President Trump. You know, what the hell else will we find if election officials and state officials and courts all do their jobs? What are we going to find? Look, I'm not holding out any hope or under any illusion that President Trump's going to be reelected. But it does tell me we have a bigger problem with fraud and corruption and manipulation than I would ever have guessed. Seriously. I mean, you know, but it does tell me we have a bigger problem. We really do. Fraud, corruption, manipulation. More frightening to me is the minimal number of people acknowledging this. Or even questioning it. People aren't even questioning it. I mean, you know, sure, there are a lot of brain dead people who claim Trump cheated in 2016. Basically, they're saying none of that now. None of it. No riots and protests recently, except at that rally on behalf of President Trump. Is the media even covering that? Are any of your progressive or liberal friends, and don't say you don't have some, we all have them. We don't like it, but we all have them. Are any of them discussing it? Any of them at all? I mean, I'm not seeing it. Just
just repulsive, really. Here's a commentary from Lee Smith of Epoch Times. It's entitled, Behind the Scenes, Obama Never Left. Two things here. It's too good to ignore, number one, and too on point to merely summarize it. So here goes. I'm just going to read it for you, folks, because this is really, really good. It's from, as I said, Lee Smith over at the Epoch Times. Now, again, it's just an opinion. It's not a, an editorial or opinion. It is not, he calls it viewpoints. So let's not, you know, get no bunch of, hey, are you reporting the truth? I'm reporting someone's opinion. Here's what he says. The publication of Barack Obama's new memoir was timed to carry the news cycle, regardless of the election's outcome. The opinions expressed in, quote, a promised land, unquote, on America, race, Donald Trump, and so on, are more vivid than anything Democratic candidate Joe Biden has said in his last year of campaigning. And so even after Biden and the press corps have declared him president-elect, he continues to walk in the shadow of his former boss. That's intentional. Obama wants it understood that Biden is an avatar for a third Obama term. Now he can complete the work of, quote, fundamentally transforming America, unquote, as he put it days before the 2008 election. Hillary Clinton was expected to at least protect what she had inherited from Obama. With the victory of Trump, who had campaigned on undoing Obama's domestic and foreign policy initiatives, left the outgoing president with only two options. Watch his successor dismantle his legacy or stop him. This coup is evidence of his choice. The senior U.S. officials, Democrat Party operatives, and media personalities who targeted the Trump circle for 4 years weren't simply defending the privileges of the deep state. These are bureaucrats, deputies, and courtiers who wouldn't dare to attempt that bold unless it was okayed from above. The purpose of the coup was to block Trump from destroying Obama's legacy until he could find an opening for him to return. In a sense, Obama never left. He was the first president in a century to stay in Washington after the end of his term. Woodrow Wilson had suffered a stroke and couldn't easily leave the Capitol. Obama explained that he and the First Lady wanted their youngest daughter to graduate from her private high school before they moved on. Their child entered the University of Michigan last fall. Oh, Jesus, that explains a lot. But with the 2020 election cycle underway, the de facto leader of the Democratic Party wasn't going anywhere. In political circles, it was no secret that Obama had thrown his support behind Kamala Harris. She's ambitious and appealing and, without any strong ideas or opinions of her own, poses no threat to him. She was Obama's ideal heir, but primary voters found her fake and unlikable, and she was out of the race in early December. He'd find a way to restore her, but in the meantime, he needed a horse to ride through the primaries. His one-time vice president, rambled incoherently, dropped lines, and finished fourth in the Iowa race. Nonetheless, in the first week of March, Obama's establishment pushed out Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg, and Elizabeth Warren to consolidate support behind Biden. In the age of coronavirus, a politician who was obviously disoriented reflected the state of the country. A voluntary shut-in was the perfect role model for Americans forced to stay home, and Obama made sure they did. In April, he told Democratic mayors on a conference call not to reopen their cities until coronavirus testing and monitoring were available nationwide. Shutting down the economic activity of major U.S. cities would put limits on any economic rebound and thereby hamper Trump's re-election chances. COVID-19 also became the platform for the massive vote-by-mail campaign, which Obama promoted the same month in a succession of tweets that also alerted Democratic voters that his was the hand driving the Biden campaign. When the details of the coup started to seep through the media blockade, Obama played defense. In May, he leaked part of a phone call with Democratic officials in which he expressed dismay that the Justice Department had dropped charges against President Trump's first national security advisor, Michael Flynn. He said that Flynn should be charged with perjury, a recommendation soon picked up by the judge in the Flynn case, who appointed a former prosecutor to make an argument for charging the retired three-star general with perjury. Throughout the spring and summer, records were declassified that gave evidence of Obama's direct role in the anti-Trump operation. They showed that in January 2017, he had tasked James Comey to continue the FBI's phony investigation of Flynn. They documented that John Brennan had told them in July 2016 that Clinton had greenlighted an operation to vilify Trump as a Russian agent. Months later, Obama directed Brennan to produce an intelligence community assessment replicating Clinton's smear campaign that delegitimized not only Trump's presidency, but also an election. Russiagate gave us rise to the special counsel investigation, which transformed into impeachment, which was replaced by the Democrats' weaponization of the coronavirus and the subsequent raising and looting of U.S. cities. Whether or not Obama is now able to consolidate his legacy, the fact is that he's already carved out his singular place in U.S. history. He's the first president who interfered in the peaceful transfer of power for 4 years, no less. And it's on his behalf that a rolling coup has pushed a nation to the edge of the abyss in order to remake it in his image. Yes, folks, that's flat out the fact. Obama has never left. He campaigned. No former president campaigns like that. He campaigned. Great, great piece from Lee Smith about the Epic Times. Wayne County, Michigan. Their canvassing board refused to certify election results, or more accurately, was deadlocked in trying to do so. The decision was reversed, and the board has now certified the results. Want to know when it happened? You don't, but I'll tell you. It happened while the live stream for its virtual meeting was down. Thus, what took place was not recorded, or so they thought. No word yet on whether Mayor Quimby, east of Kennedy-esque mayor of Springfield from the show The Simpsons, no idea whether he took part. Meanwhile, a meeting set to take place today for questions about the certification has been canceled, of course. Later, though, we heard audio from part of the meeting. What happened? Shaming, threats, the race card. One Democrat member of this canvassing board went so far as to tell them, by name, that they will leave a legacy for which their descendants will despise them, and that their final resting place, quote, will be very warm. Why? For calling into question the accuracy and the reliability of the election results and the voting mechanisms. That's it. They weren't asking that President Trump be declared the winner, merely that all possibilities of fraud, faulty software, or procedural problems be resolved. You can probably hear it if you go to Rush Limbaugh's page. It was part of his show today. Friends, this is vile stuff. I'm not gonna lie. It's vile stuff. It's absolutely disgusting. It shows how far these people will go. It's bad. I'm telling you, it's bad. Dr. Fauci, never one to shy away from a camera or a microphone, he told CNN's Jake Crapper that even after a vaccine, masks and social distancing will still be necessary. Now, according to the New York Post, Fauci said that even though it may be 95% effective for the general population, an individual doesn't know if it is working for them. Now, this begs so many frigging questions. First, what the hell are we working on vaccines and treatments for? You mean only when they are completely 100% effective are we allowed to go out and mingle without masks? Second, can we get about 10 people, you know, so it's a lawful gathering? Can we get about 10 people to go breathe on this guy? Like heavily? Oh, wait, okay, sorry. Nine people. Let's not forget, we got to count the good doctor in the gathering. I mean, this is just, I swear, this guy will be about 110. He'll still be whoring himself out all over the place over what will be, by then, of course, holographic streaming news media. Go ahead and cancel the breathe party. We're going to need this around for the Hunter Biden administration, which is really going to be just a warm-up to the Malia Obama administration. Okay, people, now are we sufficiently scared? You want some really good news? Burgess Owens, who is, I guess you'd call him the anti-Kaepernick, if you will, he was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives from Utah's 4th District, unseating incumbent Democrat Ben McAdams. Owens noted on Fox and Friends that the DNC did McAdams no favors, taking its hard turn to the left. He is one of 12 GOP electees that flipped Dem-held seats. This, of course, this kind of goes back to what Victor Davis Hanson said in his Epic Time interview, i.e. pollsters and media constantly pointing up the blue wave
that didn't actually happen. Anyway, congrats to Burgess Owens. You will represent your district and your state well, I have no doubt. Okay. Back to proof that this country is officially a dumpster fire. And make no mistake, it's a dumpster fire. A school district in Washington State officially stripped Asian Americans of the status of students of color. Why? Because they were achieving at a rate similar or better to white students. First they summarily dismissed them. Subsequently, they termed them white adjacent. Finally, after people spoke up, Asian Americans no less, the North Thurston School District issued an apology. No, not really. They issued a rewording, which said in part the following. One of our school district's strategic plans is continuous growth. All students, all subjects. One of the outcomes we are working toward in this goal is to have an increased growth rate of underperforming groups, eliminating achievement and opportunity gaps. For this reason, in one of our online documents from 2019 titled Monitoring Student Growth, we evaluated the achievement data by students of color and students of poverty. In the document, we grouped white and Asian students together. Upon reflection and response by members of the Asian American community, we will change how we look at achievement data and appreciate the feedback we received. We apologize for the negative impact we have caused and removed the monitoring report from our website. Gee, way to go. We feel it is important to continue the practice of disaggregating data, so we make equity-based decisions. When we reviewed our disaggregated data, it showed that our district is systemically meeting the instructional needs of both our Asian and white students, and not meeting the instructional needs for our Black, Indigenous, multiracial, Pacific Islander, and Latinx students. The intent was never to ignore Asian students as students of color or ignore any systemic disadvantages they too have faced. We continue to learn and grow our work with equity as a public school system, and we will ensure that we learn from this and do better in the future. Let me read this part again, because these folks think they were being coy and woke. No, they weren't. Let me tell you. We feel it is important to continue the practice of disaggregating data so we make equity-based decisions. When we reviewed our disaggregated data, it showed that our district is systemically meeting the instructional needs of both our Asian and white students and not meeting the instructional needs for our Black, Indigenous, multiracial, Pacific Islander, and Latinx students. Folks, do you know what these people just said? They just called themselves out. They admitted, we are racist. We don't teach Black students, Indigenous students, multiracial, Pacific Islander, or Latinx students. We don't teach them as well as we teach whites and Asians. We're racist. We suck at teaching people that we think we're better than. They didn't think they said it, but that's exactly what they said. These jackwagons, who first thought it was okay to insult Asian Americans by saying they weren't students of color or calling them white adjacent, and then flat out admitted without knowing it that they're racist, that they systemically do not meet the needs of Black, Indigenous, multiracial, Pacific Islander, and Latin students. Systemically, everybody's talking about systemic this and systemic that. These people are the very definition of systemic racism. Don't tell me systemic racism is a problem in America, because it's not. Systemic racism is a problem in woke liberal America. Systemic racism is a problem in our school systems, in our educators, in our academic type folks. That's where systemic racism is a problem. Not a problem in business, not a problem in law or medicine. It's a problem in the world of academia.
The very people that think they're being so woke and telling us how wrong we are about everything, stupidly, I admit, they didn't know they were doing it, but stupidly, they admit, they don't teach students of color as well as they teach white students or Asian students. You know why? As I said, because they're racist. They don't want to admit it. They don't. It terrifies them because they think they're so woke, but they're racist. How else do you explain when they say, quote, our district is systemically not meeting the instructional needs for our Black, Indigenous, multiracial, Pacific Islander, and Latinx students? So yeah, next time these racists want to tell you what a racist you are, throw it back in their face. Let them know. Ask them, hey, are you systemically meeting the instructional needs of our Black, Indigenous, multiracial, Pacific Islander, and Latinx students? Are you systemically meeting those instructional needs? Or are you the racist? Look inward, teachers. Look inward, administrators, principals, school board members. And that's all I have to say about that. I swear to God, folks, you cannot make up stuff like this. It takes actual morons, egotistical academics, and cancel culture apologists to do this. And in the case of the North Thurston School District, so was born that perfect storm. Unfreaking believable. Good God. How does that happen? How does that happen? I'll tell you how. Because they're racist. Finally, in politics, we know who the bravest person in the world is, male or female. That distinction goes to President Trump team member Sidney Powell. She said on an interview on Newsmax, there was a good reason the DNC had to stop the count. The reason, as they have done in other places, that blackout time gave the CIA time to assist in cooking the votes. Now, Ms. Powell believes President Trump probably had upwards of 80 million votes. And as she said, the fix couldn't have been mere additions to the Biden tally, as he never would have made it without arousing major suspicion. So they also had to eliminate Trump votes. As well, Ms. Powell also noted that those states require ballots to be retained a minimum of 2 years usually. However, several states, including possibly Pennsylvania, may have, quote unquote, accidentally destroyed. And they're going to use the excuse of saying we accidentally destroyed and give us a screenshot of their vote totals. This is true bravery. The people she is talking about aren't the run-of-the-mill Arkansas death merchants. These are CIA types. And the beauty of this, though, is in the reality of what the left has done for decades, i.e. always accusing the CIA of meddling in elections across the world. And if she is right, as several FEC officials have actually said, people need to see prison. And what we are witnessing is, in fact, a coup. You didn't hear it here first, but you heard it here just now. So let's go take a quick break. Since it's past the Thanksgiving or Hollywood, I can't really play you that, but let's go with it anyway. Let's send you off to break with a little bit of a Great Pumpkin Waltz. How about it? Thank you. said, we are back. Vince Guaraldi and his group from It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. That song is called Great Pumpkin Waltz. Absolutely love it. He added the flute and whatnot for that one, as opposed to the original Christmas, where he basically was just the trio. And of course, sometimes the kids singing. Vito points out about Fauci being in bed with Bill Gates for some overseas stuff. Yeah, you know, I haven't even talked about that really. Fauci is he was pushing some grant money around, U.S. grant money, and then doing some stuff with Bill Gates overseas. And of course, Bill Gates has been one of the ones saying everybody's got to lock themselves in a friggin' closet. I've said it before. I'll say that. Bezos from Amazon, Gates, Apple, those folks benefit from everybody working at home. Amazon is a bunch of traffic. Internet has this Facebook, by the way. Bezos is selling them stuff from, you know, from the comfort of your couch. Is hoping, it is as well as Apple, is hoping you'll do it with their computers. So, yeah, when millions of people went home to work, so did millions of computers. Millions of internet went over various traffic areas. Amazon carries a ton of traffic. Now, Facebook carries literally about 24%. I think somebody said 24% of the world's internet traffic. Amazon carries a great deal, too. May not have heard of it. AWS, Amazon Web Services, uses commercial, industrial email servers, encryption services, all kinds of cloud services. So, yeah, it's... Okay, let's get to sports. A report from USA Today says that officials at LSU may have not only had knowledge of sexual assault allegations against former player Darius Geis, but that they ignored them and possibly denied requests from the victims for protection. The report also noted three former players that were found responsible for sexual assaults but were allowed to remain on campus and receive deferred suspensions. It cites a total of 9 current or former football players that were reported to police since Ed Orgeron was first made interim coach in 2016. Punter for that team, Zach Von Rosenberg, supported Orgeron on Twitter. He has since taken the post down, but in it, he basically said all those players and incidents were addressed by the coach, with most being removed from the team. Orgeron himself wrote a prepared statement. He has always reported and or complied with school protocols and will continue to do so. Yeah, cheery stuff. Very cheery stuff. More college football. South Carolina's top two cornerbacks, J.C. Horn and Israel Mukwamu, have both opted out for the remainder of the 2020 season to focus on the NFL draft. In other words, basically their team sucks, so they're quitting while other news can pile up and all but erase it, that the fact that they're quitters. Let's see. It looks like Antonio Brown, before he joined the Tampa Bay Bucks, he threw a bit of a temper tantrum back in October. The community in which he was living has said that he destroyed a security camera and threw a bicycle at a security guard. Hollywood, Florida police said they had enough to press charges. However, of course, the Hollywood Oaks Homeowner Association president declined to press charges. What's that saying about when good men do nothing? The story about a good man. Kentucky offensive line coach John Schlarman passed away last week. He was 45, prolonged cancer battle. Players were understandably upset. They paid him the highest tribute last week in their game against Vanderbilt. On their first offensive series, they lined up with no left guard, which was what Schlarman played in his playing days. And they took a delay of game penalty. And Vanderbilt, to their credit, declined the penalty. Man, that is so sad. And, you know, hopefully it puts in perspective all the crap we're arguing about. Take a knee, don't take a knee, wear crap on your uniform. You know, not only have players lost a coach, but a family has lost a husband and a father who is, without dispute, a great man. This is not a, they're not reimaging his past and turning him into a guy, good guy. He was acknowledged by everyone that knew him as a good guy. They're not saying, he had a big few. He was that. And they paid tribute to him, his players. Good for them. Some good humorous stuff. I don't know if they'd call it humorous. Joe Willie Namath. He said he could see Trevor Lawrence, if he's picked first by the Jets, he says he could see him forcing a trade. I don't know how accurate that is. I don't know if he could really do that, but Namath said he could see it happening. Right now, there the Jets are the front runner for the first pick. And Eli Manning did it in 2004. But yeah, he said no, he could see it. He could see, why would it shock anyone? I agree, but after the way Lawrence has been so stand up about everything, I have a hard time seeing him do that. But on the other hand, maybe, you never know. Sad set of circumstances for Penn State's Journey Brown. He was the running back that was basically the leading rusher, returning leading rusher. He has to retire from football after being diagnosed with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. He'd been held out for the season already. They just announced in October that it was a medical condition that was discovered. Sounds like it was discovered going through all the COVID stuff, COVID testing. And so it's basically a thickening of the heart muscle, and it can lead to stiffening of the artery walls and walls of the heart and abnormal aortic and mitral heart valve function. So it was discovered through a routine COVID test, and it's not COVID related, but it's a good thing that they did all this. Think about it. If they don't do it and they don't discover it, who knows if or when it could have happened. So sad for Journey Brown, tough break for the Penn State team, but at least the guy is going out on his terms and going out by his choice. So there is that. The Hawkeyes, my Hawkeyes, play Penn State this Saturday. And last Friday, the Hawks, the Friday night game, those are tough. Not used to it yet. The Hawks, let's just say they beat Minnesota to a pulp. I notice Holder's not here in the room. Probably not called in. I hope he's listening, because we beat the pants off him, as they say. But what made news... Made ABC News, ESPN, everyone else. Kirk Ferentz used Iowa's last three timeouts in the final seconds. Now, he's been, for Hawkeye fans, this is nothing new. That he's always accused of leaving timeouts on the table. Well, Minnesota called the timeout late. Now, they said that Kirk Ferentz called the timeout to have a catch overturned. That's not what happened. The booth called for the replay. The call was overturned. But anyway, Minnesota then called timeouts. They were trying to avoid a shutout. Iowa had second and third teamers in, so Kirk decided to use all his timeouts to try and stop them from scoring. Good for him. Minnesota had their starters in. Here's what Kirk Ferentz said. He said, they called a timeout, I guess, to get a look at what we were doing and reconsider. So we just wanted to make sure we got a good look at what they were doing. No sense in taking the timeouts on the bus with us. The media keeps telling me that I've done that over the last 22 years. We figured we'd take Floyd with us and leave the timeouts here. Now, Floyd is referring to Floyd of Rosedale, which is a large 98-pound trophy pig, bronze pig, that goes to the winner of the game each year. It's a traveling trophy, i.e. it doesn't reside in one place. They don't keep a replica. We've now won six of them, the last six. But, too soon maybe, but it's I'm not going to say it. It's in semi-poor taste, even though it is funny. PJ Fleck says, the Minnesota coach, I don't know what happened. I do. They tried to stop you from scoring. Simple as that. So, yeah, you can't win with some people. There were people that were actually saying it was Bush League, it was unsportsmanlike. That's Minnesota's the one that called the first timeout. So, ha-ha. Well, here's good news on COVID. Get this. A Pac-12 testing error knocked three Stanford players, including their quarterback, out for their first game against Oregon. Last Friday, they apologized to the team after an inconclusive COVID test led to multiple players, including starting quarterback Davis Mills, from playing in their season of opening loss to Oregon. Wow. There were testing protocol errors. It's, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, yes, you got a test and all that, but we have irregularities or errors. And so they had several players out. All four of them are going to be against Colorado this week. So I guess there's that. But still, how does that happen? In a game like that? I mean, here's good news for Tennessee, the university. Eight Tennessee assistant football coaches are refusing to take pay cuts. They declined proposed pay cuts as the athletic department deals with a $40 million loss in revenue during the coronavirus pandemic. They announced the pay cuts in October, starting November 1st through June 30th, for employees making more than $50,000 a year, but Tennessee football coaches must agree to any reductions as part of their contracts. The Knoxville News reported that every head coach at Tennessee signed a contract amendment agreeing to reduce pay through June 30th. But athletic department confirmed Friday that eight assistants did not. They were offensive coordinator Jim Chaney, who's paid $1.6 million a year, defensive coordinator Derek Ainsley, offensive line coach Will Friend, quarterback coach Chris Winkie, former Heisman Trophy winner from Florida State, inside linebackers coach Brian Niedermeyer, no idea if he's related to Doug Niedermeyer, outside linebackers coach Shelton Felton, tight end coach Joe Osovet, and strength and conditioning coach A.J. Artis, who is the lowest paid assistant at $200,000 per year. The only football assistants to accept pay cuts are wide receivers coach T. Martin and running backs coach Jay Graham, who both played at Tennessee. Tennessee coach Jeremy Pruitt was not asked to take a pay cut because he did not accept a raise for 2020 in a contract extension signed in September. Athletic director Phil Fulmer announced that he would take a 15% pay cut starting on November 1st. Yeah. Well, good for them, I guess. Don't take crap off anybody in this day and age like that. I kind of wonder, it seems selfish, but why should they? I mean, I haven't heard of any other teachers taking pay cuts anyway. Have you heard of teachers and government types taking pay cuts? No. NCAA, this is interesting. NCAA has confirmed no action is being taken on a pair of proposed minority hiring policies. Their committee to promote cultural diversity and equity discussed the Oregon's Rooney Rule and the Bill Russell Rule, which require at least one qualified minority candidate to be interviewed. And it's confirmed they have not moved forward on them. I reported last week that they hadn't at that point, but it's confirmed now they are not going ahead with them. Let's see. Oh, here's a sad story. Indiana coach Tom Allen, they're having a heck of a season, by the way. They're 4-0. Playing Ohio State this weekend for the Big Ten East lead. His son is a reserve linebacker, Thomas Allen. He underwent season-ending hip surgery. He was injured last Saturday in their win against Michigan State. They won 24-0. Sad because, you know, the coach's son, and waiting his turn, he's a redshirt junior, to have it happen in a season when they're having such a great season. I know it's abbreviated, et cetera, but still, sad for him. I mean, you hate to see that happen to any kid, to have an injury take him out like that. ACC, another reshuffling of their schedule due to Miami's COVID issues. They rescheduled Miami's next three games. I'll tell you what, Miami beat Virginia Tech last weekend without 13 of their players. They were almost ready to postpone it. They had more tests and contact trace quarantines as a result of Sunday's testing. They're not going to be playing the next 2 weeks. They've adjusted their football activities. So there we go. COVID continues to lurk and do its stuff. Well, let's see. Ole Miss, Texas A&M, that's canceled for coronavirus. Here's some real cheerful news. Wichita State men's basketball coach Greg Marshall resigned. No, not to take a better job elsewhere. No, not to take an NBA job. No, internal investigation into allegations of physical and verbal abuse. Not all bad news for him, though. They agreed to a contract settlement of $7.75 million over the next 6 years. So yeah, he's not hurting here, folks. But still, let's see what he said. It's looking almost 1.3 million a year. So yeah, he's doing okay. Don't worry about him. But yeah, he supposedly choked a coach, punched a player. Sad stuff. Sad that it has to happen. But yeah, he said that he fully cooperated in the investigation. Most of them are from the 2015-16 season. He pushed and later punched a player, put his hands around a staff member's neck, tried to punch a student athlete from another sport who parked in his parking spot. Okay, the guy's got anger issues or control issues. Let's just move on. But yeah, Greg Marshall's out as Wichita State's basketball coach. Too bad he got him to a Final Four. Had him in the NCAA's line. Had him as a number one seed a couple of years ago. Okay, Ivy League. I mentioned this before. Ivy League is canceling all its winter sports. Now, they were the first to cancel their basketball tournament last spring. But, yeah, they've canceled their winter sports. Now, look, I joke and say, well, this bombshell, who's going to follow suit? You don't know, but here's one thing that they're talking about. They're talking about having the NCAA tournament all take place in one location. Now, others, Rick Pitino, who's now at Iona, he's calling for a later start date and calling it May Madness. Jimmy Boeheim, not Jim, but Jimmy, his son, is leaving Cornell's basketball program because, of course, Cornell being a member of the Ivy League is canceled, so he's leaving. So, yeah, it's people are still, I don't know, as people say, it's a flu virus, basically. And even the flu shot is not 100% effective. The chickenpox vaccine, shingles vaccine, none of them are 100% effective. And basically, athletes are not the ones having issues with this. I don't know. It's getting crazier and crazier. Now, supposedly a Biden official has come out, who's on his COVID team, has come out and said, no, we are not going to do a national shutdown or another lockdown. We can't afford that. Saying it needs to be localized, like in hotspots. I get that. I can see that. Even I'm not so anti-left or anti-Biden to say that localized, you know, might be the answer in some places. Who knows? Shutting down the country's economy? No, not possible. Can't do it. So yeah, the NCAA is actually talking about holding the NCAA March Madness in a bubble, possibly doing it in May. Okay. Let's get to it. Got to get to the top 25. No, Hawkeyes are not in there yet. Alabama is still number one. Notre Dame is still number two. Ohio State at number three. Clemson at four. Texas A&M is at five. Florida is at six. Those are two teams. Don't sleep on them. One, because with enough cancellations, playing less games, you know, that's as an example. A&M, okay, their Ole Miss game's canceled, but they only play one ranked team left, Auburn. Florida's got a tighter schedule, but, you know, they did beat Georgia. They still got Florida State. They suck, but they might have a, you know, potential SEC title game. Cincinnati from the American, they're 7-0 at number 7. They look like the real deal as well. BYU, number 8 at 8-0. You know, it's funny. They blew out Boise State a couple weeks ago. And Boise State sucked it up and won big last week. So, beat third Colorado State by 31. So, yeah, BYU could be looking at a New Year's Six bowl. Indiana is number 9. Yeah, literally this weekend, Indiana and Ohio State, essentially for all the marbles. Michigan's toast. They're not going to stay within a mile of Ohio State. They're not going to stay within a mile of anyone. Wisconsin at 10 now. Wisconsin's had several. It had two cancellations, but they look tough. But then again, it was against Michigan and against Illinois, but they look very tough. Now, Brother Tommy thinks we can beat them. He doesn't think Iowa's going to lose the rest of the way out, but we'll see. Oregon, number 11. Miami, 12. Georgia, with two losses, is number 13. Oklahoma State, 14. Coastal Carolina tied with Marshall at 15, both 7-0. Last Saturday, Marshall honored those in their 1970 team that Paul killed in a terrible plane crash, the basis for the movie We Are Marshall. That's a feel-good story, 50 years later, to see them possibly vying for a New Year's Six bowl slot. Well, Iowa State's number 17 at 5-2. I don't know. I'm not seeing it, but Oklahoma's a slot behind at 5-2. Northwestern's undefeated. They're only 4-0. Now, they've got a win over Iowa. They've got a win over Purdue. A win over Maryland is not actually cheap either. Maryland blew Penn State away. USC 20, Liberty 21. They had that walk-off against Virginia Tech. Oh, how terrible. Virginia Tech blocks the game-winning field goal only to discover, of course, that they had called a timeout to ice the kicker. So the do-over resulted in a field goal and Liberty winning that game. Texas is 22nd at 5-2. Auburn 23rd at 4-2. Louisiana 24th at 6-1, beating a Power 5 team, Iowa State, back in September. Tulsa, number 25 at 4-1. So, good teams, I guess. I don't know. Still some season left. But some of these teams, I don't know. I guess it's by nature of the fact that, you know, just some teams just haven't played enough to rank them higher. It's my only guess. So, games this weekend, going to be some good ones. Like I said, Ohio State, Indiana. Iowa, Penn State, no, it's not that it's going to be a great game in terms of the teams that are playing, but be nice to go into State College and pull that one out. But let's see who's on tap. Alabama hosting Kentucky. UCF hosting Cincinnati. That'll be a good game. UCF is, you know, still a tough team. Tulsa's going tomorrow night. UCLA, Oregon on Saturday. Indiana and Ohio State. Clemson's playing Florida State. Florida, Vanderbilt. Wisconsin, Northwestern. Wisconsin at Northwestern will be a really good game. Iowa State hosting Kansas State. That could be a good one too as well. So, and Oklahoma State at Oklahoma, of course. That'll be, Liberty's going to North Carolina State. So, yeah, there's some hiccups that could really happen this weekend. So that's it, folks. That's not it. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of these draconian Thanksgiving rules you're hearing about. You're hearing don't, gather 10 people, no more than two households that can be together. Just insane stuff like that. In some places, they're talking about you could only one person can be inside cooking, only one person to the bathroom at a time. Bathrooms may be inside, but they must be sanitized between each use. Who's monitoring that? You could go to an outdoor celebration, but you can't plan to meet up with another gathering and commingle. Seriously. Most of this is Gavin Newsom from California, but Pritzker's going to run with it. Cuomo's already running with it. I want you to think about some stuff. This, folks, when all the experts and leaders and authorities tell you it's only, quote, not to see family or friends for the holidays, just remember, many of them have already not lived up to these edicts and proclamations. California's governor, after making these proclamations, went to a party at a winery. Remember this when all these experts and leaders and authorities tell you of all the great sacrifices they've made. Remember this. Once you've bragged about something like that, it's not really a sacrifice, is it? Remember this. When all the experts and leaders and authorities tell you this is necessary, whether it's a lockdown, shutdown, travel ban, or a closure of businesses, remember, they're still getting paid by you, the taxpayer. Remember this when all the experts and leaders and authorities tell you a tax increase, elimination of a tax cut, or imposition of a new tax is necessary. Remember, your only job, at least in their eyes, was to put them into office where they could impose, eliminate, or increase taxes as they see fit. Not as you see fit. Much less what you can afford. Your only job, as far as they're concerned, was putting them in office. Remember this. Biden or Trump, senator or congressperson, governor or otherwise, these people have raised billions of dollars and taken hundreds of millions of dollars in donations from the wealthy just to be elected. An office pays at most $400,000 a year, the president of the United States. Let me know when that makes sense. Or if it already does make sense to you, please clue me in. Remember this. When a media entity declines to cover something under the guise of unverifiable, remember that they have constantly and are constantly reporting things that are unverifiable. When a media entity prematurely calls one candidate a winner, know this. It wasn't a mistake. When one media personality wears a mask in front of the camera while folks operating the camera and the sound equipment are not wearing masks, it isn't an accident. When a media personality gets caught on a, quote, hot mic, it doesn't make him or her a victim. When a media entity is blatantly partisan, denigrates people on the basis of being gun owners or sports fans or wanting to exercise freedoms, they're doing it on the selfish and egotistical assumption that their First Amendment right is more important than any and all of your constitutional rights. Remember this. When a media personality or a former Secretary of Labor calls for eradication, expungement, truth and reconciliation, truth in reconciliation, or some other sort of commission, it's not hyperbole. It's a threat. It's a real threat. Look, you can acknowledge or reject the threat however you want, but YouTube personalities and former secretaries of labor don't say those things as a joke. They say them because they're power hungry. They say them because they're vengeful. They say them because they think they can get away with it. Most of all, they say them because they're sick. That's why. So think about this. Next Thanksgiving, when you're being told that you have too many people gathering, or you're not wearing a mask, or you should all be outside, no matter what the temperature is, when you're in line at the grocery store and somebody asks you, how many people are you having over? Remember this, you don't have to tell them. It's none of their damn business. And if you want to tell them and you're having 20 people over, do it. As you've heard, as I read to you, many of these law enforcement personnel are not going to enforce these kinds of edicts and mandates. Because they understand the tradition of Thanksgiving, the tradition of family gathering. So yeah, have as many people over as you want. Be safe. I'm not saying don't be safe. I'm not saying don't wear masks if you need to. Be aware of vulnerable people in any group gathering. But yeah, next time someone tells you that this is for your own good, ask them how they know. Ask them what made them God. And just remember, it's your right, not theirs. Their rights do not take precedence over yours. Their quote-unquote wisdom is not a substitute for your freedom. Never let it be. Hey, folks, I'm out. I've had my rant. Next week, I will be here. I'm going to go a little early, though. I'm going to go at 5:30 for several reasons. One, because it's the day before Thanksgiving, and two, just go a little earlier, get things rolling, let everybody get off to their Thanksgiving celebrations, et cetera, et cetera. So have a good evening. Get your shopping done for Thanksgiving. If you got a turkey in the freezer and it's a big one, probably need to start thawing it this weekend. Don't be afraid to make stuff a day ahead, by the way. Stuff heats up fine. You know, if you make your turkey the day before and you're worried, oh, is it going to be dry? You know, cover it with foil, keep it in the fridge, and then bring it out early in the morning. Pour some chicken stock over it. You should always have chicken stock or turkey stock on hand, even beef stock. Slice it up and carve it and slice it beforehand. Nothing says you have to carve it at the table. So do that. Make it fun. Make it about family or whatever. Make it about being thankful. But most of all, do it the way you want to do it, not the way some idiot in an ivory tower thinks you should do it. And that's it for tonight, folks. Y'all have a great weekend. Go Hawkeyes this Saturday at Penn State. We will see you next week. Thank you. That's just me crying a bit, folks. Have a good one. Good night.